I'm in the Rose and Man Gallery with Simon English during his current exhibition called Simon English Figures. If we begin here, Jean Plady, what does that mean?
I think with all the titling of the work, they are really principally titled so that I can remember which each piece is. When I worked in series sometimes, it would be something like Dublin Twist 32, 34, whatever. And of course, on the phone, if you're having a conversation about, you'd never know what it was. So I now try to raid elements within the work so that I can say, yep, it's that one, that's the one. And this is what I would say is a Jean Plady one, because I kind of like Jean Plady in my mind. I wanted to sort of get her in here somehow, into the title journey. She exists in a ridiculous, absurd way at the top of the drawing, remarking or demanding in a ravaged way that somebody takes her jewels. It's a dreadful carry-on Dick Turpin moment. I think it's about a kind of absurd man-trap fantasy that I might have had even when I was about eight or nine. So it was fun. Jean Plady was this one thing little boys shouldn't be reading. I was very fascinated by that kind of Three Musketeer genre and all those dashing D'Artagnans.
The imagery is so interesting in the work. It's quite hard to describe, and also the process, the collage process. Perhaps could you say a little bit more about those two things, about the imagery and the collage?
It's been really hard for me to try and create kind of obvious chronological narratives or storytelling. It's not how I think. I think in quite an eclectic way, and I think that there's, within the drawing process, there's an inbuilt kind of chain reaction going on. Perhaps it's to do with the journey of the unconscious and that one thing triggers off another. So that nothing settles into one kind of perfect harmonious space is sort of part of where the work can exist. So side by side, things trigger off each other. And I think the collage element, it's becoming more and more to do with the fact that I'm actually beginning to really get comfortable with things like paper and the materiality of drawing, the physical choreography of drawing itself. Perhaps it's no longer storyboarding for some kind of fictitious performance, but perhaps the performance is within itself, in the drawing itself, in the making of the drawing, as well as the meaning. And this fragmented Dada thing seems to be what works.
Certainly, there's a lot of decision-making going on about what goes where. I mean, I saw this work last summer in the studio, and it was all over the floor and the walls. And you've sort of brought things together. Was that in your mind from the beginning, or did that just come with the process of sorting and archiving and organising?
Yeah, I think there's something really interesting in the way I've worked over the last 10 years. I've been lucky enough to always have rather beautiful studios, and the studio's been like a kind of mental laboratory, a kind of think tank. And the walls have always played somehow, because in a way my work is always at best in preparation for something that I probably will never do. And always at some point in the process I realise that this preparation is the work. And within that preparation there's a whole kind of physical use of space that has a way of working in the work. And I've been using the wall, in this particular work, I've been using the walls of my current studio as kind of storyboards, in a sense, or visual kind of display boards. And I've kept things fairly reverent to how they've emerged. So there's quite an interesting difference in the work. There's a chronology of time.
It's interesting as well, because you have this playfulness, certainly in your technique, and then there's also darker elements lurking underneath.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I've really, having been at it for a while, is that I realise all the different kind of notes or kind of instruments of drawing. Each thing kind of kickstarts each other. So there might be a playful, fun, comic, pathetic, sad, can't do, will do, won't do, want, as well as memory, desire, whether it's reality, whether it's an actual memory or a desired memory. So sometimes the lighter one gets, the more you get geared up for the opposite. And it's all about despair and hope and love and all the rest of it. It's an absurd comedy of, I think, all the kind of psyches, in a way.
There's a lot of homoerotic content in all of this work.
I think it's probably my relationship to drawing and life. Sometimes I might approach a drawing like a sort of safe haven, something that's going to be like a pleasant space to occupy, and I've got that desire to enter sort of sweet woodland of memory and youth, and other times something else is kicking in and has me kind of much more overtly hijacking a fairly classical language and a desire to use the body, turning it or transforming it into some other object of maybe desire, maybe frustration. Sometimes it's absurd. These penises become huge, and I'm not even aware in a way of why I'm doing it, other than maybe it's to, in some kind of conversation or dialogue, drop something like a cup, just to change the pace, or genuinely subvert, fuck up what one's trying to have done, maybe in another direction. So I enjoy this sort of inability sometimes to go where I want to go.
What's the title of this one?
This one is El Greco's Knees.
Yes, we can perhaps as well talk about the historical content, which there's lots of to-ing and fro-ing between different historical periods, artists you've obviously looked at. Could you say a bit about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of art worship, you know, in the sense that comes and goes out. El Greco, I mean, I just remember seeing his show in Rome. It was an incredibly beautiful show, and there was something about his impossible space and his paintings that I was really quite addicted to. It was an odd summer after that. I wasn't that well, and I'd wanted to make very harmonious paintings, and I sort of couldn't, and it was all about the time that I was about to leave Laurent. And I sort of knew somehow that El Greco was important for me, but one could never approach him in the right way. I like the muddy knees. There's something very mischievous and sort of cruisy and sexual about this. Perhaps it's about playfulness, or to take something that one reverently loves and to just enjoy it in a very human, normal way.
Are you struggling with the paint here? What kind of paint are you using, could you say?
It's oil paint. and you point at this thing that says, I don't know how to paint. And there I am trying terribly hard once again to be just as prolific as El Greco. And this is really interesting, this paper, to work on. It's almost like blotting paper, and it sort of loves oil paint. At the same time, it rejects it, which is something that mirrors my own feelings about painting, the kind of absolute love of it, also a curious kind of terror of what it's about, both sort of contextually and as a kind of physical substance.
Seems to be a resistance for you. I'm not a painter, I'm drawing, I'm doing collage, a narrative. There's lots of layers.
Yeah, I think it's not me being promiscuous in a sense. I think that I genuinely, at the core of it, need this kind of drawing thing. I've always liked and loved paint and painting, but there's a very different part of the brain that's opening up. It's perhaps much more sensual than the sort of more spirit-based side of drawing and the line. And always when I come home of a good day of drawing or a bad day of drawing, whatever, I've somehow got or attacked some element of that part of the imagination. With paint, it's almost like something I haven't quite worked out. It always really opens up a very, very sensual thing, which really is very understandable why Cézanne spent his entire life painting apples. In a way, it's great. It's such a thing in its own right, and it's a question of trying to get these two things to work side by side so that painting is not just simply the next stage of drawing, but it actually has that same kind of kicking, or from its own terrain. And occasionally I really get a whiff of it, how it could be, how that's possible, looking at a Goya or even a Karen Klimnik or something, where there's just such beautiful kind of ease at the way it presents itself. And every now and again I think, yeah, I can do it. It's kind of quite exciting.
In a way, you're making it half yourself by choosing this surface that's difficult. Did you ever think about using canvas? Could you mix paper and canvas, or would that not work?
I've done a bit. I have worked on canvas a lot. Of course, the edge of these vast big structures in the studio intimidate me. There's something even about the surface of the canvas which needs to be treated, primed and so on, which makes it, again, not so interesting for me. There's something about paper that I can tear, rip, physically manipulate. I mean, one of the most beautiful shows I saw a few years ago was the Fontana spatial concept pieces and those wonderful physical paper things. And I suddenly feel very much freer knowing I can fold, tear, rip, you know. And in a way, that's come, without my knowledge, it's actually come into this work. and become really just as substantial a substance for me mentally as canvas, but without the legacy or the obligation to find a rigid structure that would be absurd if it took different shapes. Whereas these can be different shades, they are what they are. They're vulnerable and strong at the same time.
You had some work in the Saatchi. Were you part of the YBA? Did you feel you were part of that group of artists?
I would love to have been part of it in many ways. I adore so much of that period. I think certainly not in terms of the fact that I'd been something of a hermit and also probably a generation older. It was a very strange turning point to go from that very solitary studio suddenly into the kind of the centre court at Wimbledon, as it were. I loved that exciting time, and it was thrilling, you know, but I wouldn't say that I was a ticket that was an obvious one for that.
You've had quite a period of not showing work, and I know that your work has changed the process and materials and the look of it. Can you say a little bit about what's behind that? What happened in that process?
I think that the time off is really sort of the most visible time off, is, as it were, as seen from the art world, is really perhaps the time that I left my gallery, which was actually only in 2000. And that was when I was working with Laurent Delay. And I think I just felt very strongly that I needed some time to get back. It's this curious thing that I keep looking for, this sort of other part of the brain or something where I sort of know when I'm experiencing the work very deeply from its own making point of view and when I'm kind of hacking it for a showing agenda, whatever it is. And I felt that I wasn't able to reach the work within that particular gallery context, though I still have a great friendship with Laurent. It was time to kind of move on. And in that, I found a beautiful freedom. And very quickly, was doing kind of group shows like Gimpel Fees, FA Projects, and doing a solo show in Oslo and so on. These weren't sort of notably visible things, but I'm very aware that the last 3 years have been very hermetic to a certain extent in the studio, and I've had this very strange kind of private space that I'm working with. And it's been amazingly emancipating not to have to answer to anyone but myself. And it's not that it's a solo, self-indulgent journey. There's always been this feeling of communication locked within the work. I've always felt somehow that I was talking to someone and not just myself. So I don't believe it to be necessarily an indulgence that some people might think, but certainly it's been tough.